Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 30th day of October 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Andy Schaefer should join us in about 20 minutes or so to take a look at the agricultural cash grain markets near his facility in northwestern Iowa in Everly. And then as we close out our half hour, we'll discuss the weather forecast, that with Jim Angel at the Illinois State Water Survey Prairie Research Institute. And we'll also, along the way, take a really in-depth look at big data and explore what happened in Washington, D.C. when a committee decided to discuss that topic this week on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Futures in Chicago finished the week or the day higher, that is. December contract at $3.82 1/4. In the corn pit, up 2 1/4. March up a penny and 3/4 at $3.91 1/2. The May at $3.97 1/4, up a penny and a half. And July corn up 1 1/2 cents at $4.01 1/2. And next year's December at $4.08, up 1 1/2 cents. Soy complex, November beans up a nickel, $8.83 3/4. The settlement price, January up 5 1/2 at $8.85 3/4. March, $8.88 3/4, up 5 1/2 cents. July up 5 3/4, and next year's November up 5 1/2 cents, all in the soybeans. Bean meal futures up $2.80 at $3.04.40. The bean oil up 32 cents at $28.20. Soft red winter wheat at 5.22, up 7 cents. July at 5.30, up 5. And July hard red up 5 1/4. It finished at $5.30 as well. Live cattle futures from Chicago finished the nearby contract at $139.25, down 87.5 cents. December down $1.10 at $141.70. January at $182.70. And the feeder cattle $1.55 higher. And the lean hogs in the December contract 65 cents lower at $59.22 1/2. I should say that the January contract and the feeder cattle were down $1.55, not up $1.55. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may always find us online at willag.org. You can listen live there. Just hit the button at the top of the page, or after the fact, just hit whichever product you'd like to hear.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In some of the outside markets at this hour, crude oil futures at $46.37 a barrel, up 31 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.60 7/10 a cent, a penny and 9/10 higher. Gasoline at $1.39 9/10, up 4 9/10. And heating oil $1.49 3/10, up a penny and 8/10. That's diesel fuel. Natural gas for the day on its last trade at 7 3/10 higher, $2.33. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 52 points at 17,632. And the U.S. dollar down 0.344 at 97.02. Gold futures in Chicago at $1,141.25, actually at the New York Stock Exchange, down $6.05. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Showers are likely. Those will come mainly after 4 in the morning. Mostly cloudy, a low of 46 otherwise tonight. South-southeast winds at 6 to 8. Chance of rainfall overnight, 60%. Chance of rainfall tomorrow, 100%, a high of 54. It'll be occasional showers, though, in the area. South-southeast winds at 11 to 16. Saturday night, the showers will continue through about 1 a.m. Cloudy, then gradually becoming partly cloudy, with a low of 47. Southwest winds at 5 to 10. Chance of rainfall on Saturday evening in the area set at 60%. Sunny skies on Sunday, a high of 66. Sunday night, clear and 48. Monday, to start the work week, sunny skies and 70. That should be fantastic as we get into November, and just a low of 49 under clear skies on Monday evening.
agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Atchison, Kansas. Did you warm up from your overnight lows in the upper 20s last night, Mike?
Yeah, we're up into the blistering mid-40s now with a very strong wind, Todd.
That's what you get for living out west, big boy.
That's right.
You get a strong wind. However, we get a lot of wind here, as evidenced by all of the wind-powered.
I thought you were going to say from all the analysts.
Well, we get a lot of that, too. That's hot air. That's not wind. That's something different.
I'm speaking for myself, not anybody else.
I know. They won't care. All right. So let's talk a little bit about what happened this week, in particular today. Not a bad day to end the week. A whole lot of green on the page once we finished out the close in Chicago.
Yeah, and I guess I'm pretty satisfied with the weekly trade at the end of the day, at the end of the week. The macro side stayed and held together. The Chinese home prices are rebounding. We saw the crude oil close up about $1.80 before settlements here in the December, stuck above the 50-day moving average by just a hair. And even the micro supply-demand fundamentals for the grains, I think, really held together nicely. That cash corn basis continued to firm, and the beans did as well. We saw those weekly export sales we talked about this morning. One thing I didn't mention this morning that I found was very interesting, and it goes back to the dollar amount of trade versus the volume amount of trade, is that the U.S. Grains Council came out and estimated just over 100 million metric tons of U.S. feed grains were exported in the 14-15 marketing year. That's going to be the second highest ever if realized, and it's going to be about 800,000 metric tons more than last year. So in volumetric terms, not dollar-based terms, we continue to see a very stout agriculture demand around the world. And I guess the last thing I'd say is technically we held up pretty well as well, Todd, with the wheat market. Wheat and crude were the two biggies for me this week to show some muster and show some confidence in the market, and we did get that out of the wheat. Dece wheat looks like it's going to close up over 30 cents higher in the soft red futures, so that was very, very nice to see, and that kept the Bloomberg Grain Index on the weekly basis in a, quote, buy signal on my chart as well. So if I would have had my druthers, I would have loved to have seen Dece wheat close above its 200-day moving average, just a bit above where we settled out today, and I would have loved to have seen the Dece corn close on new weekly highs and break through that 387.5 level. I think there's probably some building of buy stops just above that level, if I had to guess.
Yeah, so that's a nice rally in the wheat pit. Corn pit did manage to close higher for the week. However, soybeans did not, down just slightly, but it wasn't a big loss on the week.
No, and I think, again, like we've seen probably for the last 6 or 7 months, these speculators really are, I think, liking and enjoying this corn-bean spread and this corn-bean ratio, and we were due for a pullback with the beans really running hard last week against the corn, and so it makes sense that Dece corn is going to be up a couple, and Jan beans with November in delivery. I'm not really looking at those as much, although they were very light deliveries for the first notice day, so that was nice to see. But Jan bean's going to close down about a dime, and I suspect that that bean corn ratio is going to continue to be heavily traded until we get everything shaken out as far as what the yields are for the corn and beans in the coming months by USDA.
You're out there a lot closer to beef cattle country than we are here. What are your expectations for that marketplace?
I was surprised by the trade. This week, early in the week, I had done a couple other shows out here in the West, radio shows out here in the West. I really thought that the hogs would gain on the cattle because packer margins are really suffering now. After being near record a week, 2 weeks ago for cattle, they're now starting to dance in negative territory based upon the hedger's edge break-even analysis. And I really thought that we'd probably see the hogs come in and bring in a lot of spreading in favor of the hogs against the cattle. I think that news report about bacon in particular and the cancer and the colon cancer and whatnot really disrupted the trade. We did see pork bellies nosedive almost $15 yesterday on the wholesale market, and that really hurt the wholesale pork price. And so I'm going to say that probably came in and messed up my analysis. If I had to guess, next week we would be better in hog trading and a little bit weaker in the cattle trading as these heavy cattle continue to come off pastures and come into the feedlots. And we did 142 to 143 on the fat cattle cash trade on Wednesday. Just Wednesday was about the only day we saw any activity, and then it kind of dried up. So I'm going to say we'll have a repeat of my analysis next week unless something new comes in or a new story comes in, kind of like we had this week.
Yeah, on that news report, and I'll step outside of my area just a little bit, but as a journalist, it was not very well done on the journalistic side. Those who covered it didn't get to the meat of that one very quickly, so to speak. I should be careful the way
they got to the fat.
Yeah. let's call it hogwash, relatively speaking. You know?
Yeah, it was pretty flaky. I agree.
It was kind of funny because what it really said, and I think what WHO wanted to say, was if you eat processed meats every day, then you probably are going to increase your chance of cancer. However, they threw in some things in the press release that were a little funny. The press release included smoking and a couple of other things, and said it was comparative. But what they were comparing were the number of studies that say smoking is bad for you and the number of studies that they looked at, 800, and how many of those said eating processed meat was bad for you, but not really that smoking and, for instance, eating processed meat were in the same category or even close. So globally, about 6 million people get cancer of some sort from smoking or from tobacco. I should be careful about that one, too. In the United States, it's 480,000. Those are CDC numbers. And then if you just go with the global number, 6 million for cancer from tobacco, 34,000 globally for only one type of cancer, colorectal, and that was the only one they're able to really pinpoint from eating processed meats. None from red meat that they could justify. So it was an oddity, and I don't know, the media didn't read far enough into it. It's part and parcel of trying to be first.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm no doctor, but I think that you should be worried if you're smoking a pack of cigarettes at breakfast while you're eating some bacon. That would concern me after this report.
I'd be worried if I had somebody in my life that did that.
But, you know, getting back to the seriousness of the cattle trade, what I did not like to see on the weekly production, why I think this next week could be a weaker cattle trade in reference to the hogs, is that we did see another dress weight gain. You know, we went up to 852 pounds. 2 pounds more than last week, and that compares to 828 last year. So we've got those heavy cattle coming, and I just don't think we traded that very much this week. So I'd be a little bit more on the defensive, especially in the feeder market. I think the cattle lots are probably not going to be real excited to take a lot of cattle at expensive prices at this point, or as they see expensive.
Always fun to talk with you. Thanks so much.
You too. Have a great weekend, Todd.
You too. That is Mike Zuzlow. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting and out of Atchison, Kansas, and he will be with us for our event in November, the Farm Assets Conference. You can buy your tickets right now at farmassetsconference.com or 800-898-1065. We'll start today's agricultural news in Nevada, Iowa, where the world's largest cellulosic ethanol plant opened today. It's owned by DuPont and will produce some 30 million gallons of ethanol per year from corn stover. While the largest cellulosic ethanol plant in the world, it is very small by today's standards. Most are 100 million gallons annually or more. Corn stover is made up of the stalks, leaves, and cobs left in a field after harvest. DuPont expects the facility to demonstrate at commercial scale that non-food feedstocks from agriculture can be the renewable raw material to create a biofuel. Nearly 500 farmers from within a 30-mile radius will supply the Nevada, Iowa facility, with more than 375,000 dry tons of corn stover to be processed into cellulosic ethanol. The plant will create 85 full-time jobs and more than 150 seasonal local jobs in the Ames, Iowa region. From Iowa, we go to Washington, D.C., where the House Agriculture Committee has completed a hearing examining big data and its role in agriculture. Members and witnesses discuss the opportunities and challenges that advances in agricultural technology present. Among the items explored, improved productivity and efficiency, as well as collecting, managing, and utilizing farm data. Big data impacts every aspect of agriculture, and the question going forward for the committee is how best to use, collect, and protect the data. On a related note, Steve Sonka from the University of Illinois has posted the first of six articles on big data to the FarmDoc Daily website. The articles cover why analytics are needed to derive value from the big data numbers, the differences between big data and precision agriculture, why it all matters, how the food sector is already deploying the information, the revolution about to happen, and who will drive it. Watch for the article on the FarmDoc Daily website. More on big data coming up in a moment. Elsewhere in Washington, D.C., we should check up on agriculture and crop insurance. It may have dodged a bullet, but ag lobbyists say it's not out of the woods yet. $3 billion in crop insurance savings, House Ag Committee leaders averted in a last-minute deal with GOP leaders, must be made up somehow. Neither House nor Senate lawmakers know exactly how yet, says Dale Moore. He's the executive director of the American Farm Bureau Federation.
Based on the briefings and the information we got from Chairman Conaway and from Ranking Member Peterson and their team at the House Agriculture Committee, we're confident that they have some ideas in mind. While they've not shared those with us, again, we're confident that as we move forward over the next few weeks, we will find out what their plan is, and we look forward to working with them to find those savings that they don't cut crop insurance, don't cut the important risk management safety net tools that are so important to farmers and ranchers, and at the same time, make sure that we do not open the farm bill in this process.
National corn grower Sam Willett says House Ag staffers claim the committee will not have to find alternative savings, raising the question how airtight the deal may be. Still, Willett says producers should be vigilant.
Crop insurance is always going to have a target on it, and it's imperative that growers and all those folks impacted by agriculture need to be cognizant of the fact that we have huge debts in this country.
One of Congress's leading budget cutters and former budget chair Paul Ryan just became the new House Speaker, of course. His March 2012 budget plan called for $30 billion in agricultural savings, including from crop insurance. At the time, Ryan said,
"Do I think you can get more reform out of crop insurance subsidies? Yes, I do. I also think the bulk of the savings need to come from direct payments, but that is up to the Agriculture Committee to decide exactly how they do that."
The Ag Committee ended direct payments and saved billions in the farm bill. However, after being blindsided by leadership this week on crop insurance, they'll obviously be facing what continues to be threats for some time to come. And finally today, Iowa Senator Joni Ernst has announced she believes there is now enough support in the United States Senate to consider her bill that would scrap the Waters of the U.S. rule. Senator Ernst has secured enough support to ensure the Senate can consider the bill without a filibuster. It's expected the effort to stop the expanded definition of WOTUS will be taken up in the next week or two. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Now let's take a deeper look at the House Agriculture's big data hearing. The House Agriculture Committee this week did hold a hearing on the so-called big data in agriculture. The industry continues to debate who should have access to farm data and how much farmers, businesses, and the government should get to look at the numbers. A number of industry representatives testified earlier this week about how they collect data and their efforts to assure farmers that individual pieces of collected data remain confidential or anonymous. Mike Stern, president and chief operating officer of the Climate Corporation, said it all goes back to the idea that a producer owns data, so there needs to be standards.
Ultimately, we believe this has to be a decision that's made by the grower around what data needs to be shared. And then it's the responsibility of us in the industry or others associated with receiving that data to make sure that the data that they're getting is used for the purposes under which they've agreed for us to use it. The question then is, can you get more value by aggregating a lot of that data? And I think when you talk to growers, I think they're very, very open to the concept of aggregating and anonymizing data because they recognize that that can bring benefits back to their farm. You know, anecdotally, when I talk to growers, they say, hey, look, I don't want you to sell it to anybody. I don't want marketers calling me at dinner time, those types of things. But if you can do things by aggregating data that's going to help me be more productive, you know, I'm really willing to do that. So I think the framework and that understanding at the grower level is there.
Matt Rushing, Vice President of Advanced Technology Solutions for AGCO Corporation, told the committee that many farmers are waiting to see the benefits of data sharing before diving in.
Precision farming technologies are focused on inputs and environmental impacts while optimizing the farm operation and lowering growers' input costs, improving overall efficiency, and maintaining stewardship of the land. Advanced sensors and sensor fusion continue to enable better data acquisition, better insights into input deployment and yield. Cloud computing and wireless connectivity allows for more efficient analysis and more granular management of land, machines, and inputs. These technologies create a tremendous amount of data that's not always fully utilized by growers. We submit to the committee that smart, connected farm equipment and growers' ability to effectively manage and use this data is at the forefront of the next farming revolution. Machinery that collects it, farm managers and agronomists who can analyze it, and on and off-board technologies that transfer it, read it, and put it into action will be the next tools farmers use to unlock the value of their data. So harnessing this data has the potential to be the next big driver from farm productivity gains, similar to the transition we saw 100 years ago when we moved from horses to machinery.
That may very well be the case, but some farmers remain reticent to share their data. Bill Tiller is the Director of Business Development and co-founder of Grower Information Services Cooperative. He's out of Lubbock, Texas.
What about data privacy? Let me say this. There's machine data out there, and this is very disconcerting to me, that when I buy a machine, I might not always own the data that might come off my machine. I can't hardly believe that. I paid money for this. It'd be like you buying a Kodak camera back in the day and then realizing that Kodak might want the pictures off the camera. It doesn't make sense to me, and I don't think it makes sense to you either. You should own the data if you bought the controller. And so there are those things around data ownership. Also, I'd like to say that the landscape's changing. I mean, quickly changing. And what I mean by that is think about how quickly we went from smartphones to where we're talking about the cloud. And that's just been in the last 2 or 3 years.
Advances do move swiftly. However, there are technical barriers within rural America for participation in the big data as it relates to producers. Colin Peterson, a representative from Minnesota, pointed out a major effort is needed to address the lack of broadband services in many parts of America.
All of this technology is great, but it's not going to do anybody any good if we don't have reliable broadband. You know, we made a lot of progress, but there are still huge parts of the country that don't have reliable service. And in spite of all of the money that we've spent trying to get broadband into unserved areas, people continue to overbuild existing systems and spend the money places that, in my opinion, they shouldn't. Somehow or another, you know, we need to take this universal service fund away from telephones and put it into broadband and do what we did back in the 30s, where we get it to every house. And somehow or another, we got to figure out how to do this.
There is an effort to expand broadband access across America, and legislation has been introduced. It would reduce federal regulations and other red tape on the development of broadband infrastructure, participating in particularly rural areas. If you have questions on big data, of course, you can use our Farm Assets Conference to answer those at farmassetsconference.com. Back in 2 minutes.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Candy Corn Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1815, Andrew Jackson Downing was born. An American horticulturalist, he authored The Fruits and Fruit Trees of America. In 1823, Edmund Cartwright died. He created a machine that improved the speed and quality of weaving. His power loom, which Cartwright patented in 1785, revolutionized weaving, changing it from a manual process into a mechanical one. Later, he would equip his power looms with steam engines, and he would go on to also invent a machine for combing wool. In 1900, the first ever U.S. auto show opened in Madison Square Garden in New York City. In 1918, Robert C. Siemens Jr. was born. An American aeronautical engineer, he pioneered the development of advanced systems of flight control, fire control, and guidance for modern aircraft. In 1945, the U.S. government announced the end of shoe rationing. During World War II, each man, woman, and child could purchase up to 3 pairs of leather shoes a year. In 1944, the ration was reduced to 2 pair as leather reserves decreased. To keep it simple, only 6 shades of leather were produced. And in 1952, Clarence Birdseye sold the first ever frozen peas. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. A couple of notes. Please do visit our website at willag.org. There you'll find some different links. One for the Field and Furrow Club's 80th anniversary event. That's next Saturday, not this one, right here on this campus. If you're a Field and Furrow member or if you happen to help out with the renovation of Turner Hall, you're welcome to come. It's all absolutely free. I'll MC an event, including a meal on Saturday night. Get your tickets online. You can find the links at willag.org. You can also buy tickets to our Farm Assets Conference there, farmassetsconference.com or willag.org. Tickets for that one are $30. We'll explore big data, take a look at the commodity markets, discuss next year's crop budgets, and so much more. Should be a great day in November, the 24th, a Tuesday before Thanksgiving, in Bloomington Normal at the Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Buy your tickets now for the Farm Assets Conference. You can dial in at 800-898-1065. That's 800-898-1065. Now, here's Jim Angel with today's agricultural weather forecast.
This is Jim Angel, the Illinois State Climatologist. As we come to a close to October, Illinois temperatures were almost 2 degrees above average. The statewide average precipitation was 1.3 inches, which is about 50% of average and the 16th driest October on record. Most of the precipitation in October came in the last full weekend. Monthly totals of 1 to 2 inches were common in western and northern Illinois. Amounts were generally less than an inch in eastern and southern Illinois. While soil moisture declined considerably in October, there was a rebound at the end of the month at the 2 and 4 inch levels, according to the Water Survey Soil Moisture Network. 4-inch soil temperatures under grass are slowly cooling off as well. North of Interstate 80, daily highs are now in the low 50s. In central Illinois, they are in the mid to upper 50s. And south of Interstate 70, daily highs are now in the low 60s. According to the National Weather Service, Saturday will be cool with highs in the 50s. Rain is expected throughout the state on Saturday before it moves out on Sunday morning. Amounts are expected to be modest and in the range of 1/4 to 1/2 inches. Highs on Sunday through Thursday will be in the upper 60s and low 70s, which is above average for this time of year. Lows will be in the 40s through Tuesday and in the 50s on Wednesday and Thursday. The longer range forecast through November 12th points towards warmer and wetter conditions. This is Jim Angel, State Climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, which is part of the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois.
Our thanks, of course, go to Jim Angel and all the meteorologists who help out here each and every week at willag.org. You can listen to them online anytime you'd like at willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including Commodity Week, which is coming up in just a moment. A good show, so stay with us. But if you don't have the opportunity to listen now, you can hear it on many of these radio stations tomorrow morning or online at WILLAG.org. Commodity Week gets posted to our website most Thursday evenings by about 5 to 5:30 before it ever airs on any of our radio stations. Thanks for listening. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. That wraps up this edition of the Closing Market Report. Commodity Week is next. Cultural programming is a joint production of University of Illinois Extension and Illinois Public Media.